From the Sky News Centre at 6, the French prosecutor says the man who shot dead a policeman in Paris last night had a long police record, notably for trying to attack officers. François Malan has been describing what was found following the attack last night.
A piece of paper that was discovered near the body of Karim Shafi, which seems to have fallen from his pocket, shows a written message which defends the Daesh cause. In the boot of the vehicle, a black sports bag was discovered, containing a pump-action shotgun, various knives, as well as a cutter.
Despite his long police history, Mr. Malan says Shafi never showed any signs of radicalisation. They're investigating whether he worked alone.
BCFM.
He exercises all the power of the first beast. So you've got two beasts. We've got the first beast and we've got the second beast. Now please notice they work in tandem. This man is political. This man over this side is religious.
Welcome back to BCFM's Politics Show with Old Labour Oxford economist Martin Summers and me, Tony Gosling. So, the new US Defence Secretary Mad Dog Mattis thinks President Assad still has a secret WMD stockpile. But how he knows? Well, he can't tell us. He's in Tel Aviv today, signing the special relationship between Israel and the US military. And he's been making more accusations about Syria's supposed chemical weapons arsenal. But has Mattis come to the end of the credibility line? Does the world believe what he says and what the Pentagon says anymore? Seventy kids killed last weekend, last Easter Saturday, in a refugee convoy bomb near Homs. We'll be talking about that as well. And it's a civilian think tank that's driven war after war for the past 50 years. US Army whistleblower Scott Bennett worked there when they were planning the so-called Arab Spring. Yes, I'm talking about the US-based RAND Corporation, which he says is where the Arab Spring was really born. Not in the hearts and the minds and on Facebook and on Twitter over in Egypt or Tunisia. Our sister show Dialects here on BCFM 93.2 at noon every Tuesday. This week we hear from Hartcliffe's very own Kerry Bales. Why locals there are unhappy with Bristol Mayor Marvin Rees and the way he's cutting essential council services. They don't blame central government, they blame Marvin. Also, Sonia Morn joins us to share her thoughts about all roads from the world wars, World War One, World War Two, and she thinks a coming World War Three leading back to Freemasonry. That's Dialect at noon on Tuesday. Listen again at bcfmradio.com/dialect, or if you can't wait, download it now from dialectradio.co.uk. But first of all, Martin, attack in Paris in the Champs-Élysées yesterday, some pretty suspicious things immediately. This guy that supposedly was behind the murder of a shooting with a Kalashnikov of a police officer was already well known to the French security services. He'd been already in jail for trying to shoot a policeman. And not only that, a couple of hours before this attack, he posted exactly what he was going to do on social media.
Well, obviously, it's hard to say exactly what happened because we don't know. That's what the caveat you have to say about all of these things. But the pattern in the past has been that these attacks are either they're either let happen or they're made to happen. And there's all sorts of evidence to suggest that the Islamist terrorist groups which are behind these attacks are actually heavily infiltrated by the intelligence services, and that the intelligence services are in fact allowing these attacks to happen so that they can aggrandise more power to themselves. And people might say, oh, that's terrible, you can't say things like that. I'd say we've got evidence going back decades that that is
let's just bring this back to home a little bit. I can remember during the IRA bombing campaign in the early 1990s in London, that the MI5 were not intervening to stop bombs happening. They were watching everything. And in fact, the IRA used to make a big play of waving at the CCTV cameras just before they set a bomb off.
Well, listen, there's always infiltration, but it's worse than that. If people need to think about what Al-Qaeda and ISIS actually are, they were set up originally in the 1980s by the Safari Club, which was set up by the French intelligence services. It was their idea, the Safari Club, and they approached the Americans, the British and others, because the Church Committee in the US had started to investigate the CIA's bad behaviour and started to clip their wings. So the French approached the CIA and set up the Safari Club, whereby other secret services would carry out the CIA's operations for them, including the Saudis. And of course, they then created an Islamic International Brigade to fight in Afghanistan against the
Soviets. Look, let's just bring this down to earth a little bit, because this French attack yesterday, apparently this gunman was the focus of an anti-terror probe. So it might be that he'd been interviewed, questioned, etc., literally within the last few days. Mm. We've also heard from Marine Le Pen as part of the election campaign that all French terror suspects should be expelled if they don't actually have French citizenship. She's saying, if you're a terror suspect, why should we let you stay here?
Yeah, but what she's missing the point, which is that the intelligence services are actually behind the terrorism. And I think that that's what
What you're saying is not that. You're saying that they're just allowing these attacks to happen.
No. It's worse than that. It's worse than that. There was an arrest of an ISIS cell, which was discovered in the south of France, I've forgotten where, and then it transpired that the ISIS cell was in actual fact part of supposedly an exercise being run by the intelligence services. So the local police bust the cell. I think I've mentioned this to you before. We can put a link up on the show page to this. And then the local police were then told, oh, sorry, this was actually an exercise. This isn't what you think it is.
Well, hang on a minute, because this attack yesterday, ISIS, the so-called Islamic State, has said one of its fighters carried out this attack.
Yes. But ISIS is a front organisation for Saudi Arabia and the Western intelligence services. Ask the Syrian army. This is what people don't seem to understand. We've been doing this for years. Action Direct, which was a left-wing terrorist group, was actually allowed to operate by the intelligence services in the 1980s and onwards. Most terrorism, Islamist, right-wing and left-wing, has been orchestrated by NATO intelligence services. That's what Fernando Imposimato, the head of the Italian Supreme Court, believes, and he's carried out decades of investigation into NATO intelligence services. And of course, that's certainly what the Russian general staff, the Syrian general staff, the Iranian general staff and the Chinese general staff believe. Now, of course, the British general staff are part of the problem, not part of the solution. It's a war.
Well, the timing of this is interesting, isn't it? Because, if anything, the timing of this right in the run-up to the presidential election campaign in France, not only does it mean that there's likely to that the state of emergency, which has been running since last year, the Paris attacks last year in France, carries on, but also, of course, it's going to be completely counterproductive to any kind of like multicultural Islamic cause. It's going to completely an attack like this totally play into the hands of the far right and the nationalists and Marine Le Pen's party. So this terror attack seems to me as if this guy, whoever has carried it out, is working actually for Marine Le Pen.
Well, what's going on here is the creation of as much social division as possible in order to achieve a
police
state.
What I'm pointing out is that the aim of this person apparently would be to assert some call of Islamic fundamentalist rights. But actually, the effect of this attack, any idiot can see who's about to go into an attack, that this is going to have completely the opposite
Yes,
effect.
of course. But I mean,
actually, it may even help Marine Le Pen win this
election. Well, indeed, and Marine Le Pen has already tried to capitalise on it by making demands about immigration which are irrelevant to the case. because the guy was already in the country. Now, the fact is that people when they see people shot like this, they think, well, it must be genuine because nobody would throw their lives away like that. But you've got to remember that in the United States, 95% of the people who've been convicted of terrorist offences were entrapped by the FBI. That is to say, they created the plots and recruited people to those plots, including the 1993 World Trade Center bombing, which killed six people. The explosives were supplied by the FBI. That's all came out in the court records and the court transcripts. Now, of all, 95% of the terrorist offences inside the United States were entrapment offences. In other words, people wouldn't have... And the people they entrapped tended to be mentally unstable, drug and alcohol issues, and some connection to Islam. So they've been targeted. So and the 5% that weren't entrapment cases, they're all dead, because then they get shot, like the Kouachi brothers after the attack in Paris some years ago, the Charlie Hebdo attack. Once they're dead, somebody's dead, and you say, well, they're the ones who carried out, they're dead, that's the end of it, then there's no court case. Although, of course, there's evidence frequently that attacks are not carried out by lone people, they're actually carried out by more than one person. Now, I don't know what's happened in this case. He could be a lone ISIS gunman. But the fact is that ISIS has been set up and orchestrated by the Saudi secret services working with MI6 and MIT in Turkey.
Okay, we're told the gunman who's now been shot dead is Karim Sharoufi. For a long time, they wouldn't release the name. They have today. Karim Sharoufi was actually jailed for a short time for apparently attempting to kill a French policeman. He was also, more recently, he was apparently attempting to obtain firearms so he could kill police. That was according to the French police. So it does seem that it's a little bit strange that somebody who has been convicted of this sort of crime should just be allowed to kind of carry it out without the security services stopping them.
Well, that's because...
Get hold of firearms.
Well, yes, and why would they allow police officers to be killed? Well, in Italy in the 1960s, police officers were allowed to be killed, supposedly by the Red Brigade, but it turned out that it wasn't the Red Brigade.
He's actually served 15 years in jail before he died yesterday for attempted murdering of police officers.
Yeah. And so, in other words, what may well be happening here is this guy has been pointed in a certain direction and he's clearly got the capacity to do these things, and he's been allowed to do it. Now, I don't know whether that's the case. It may just be incompetence all round.
It also does seem that almost all of these terrorist suspects nowadays, apart from, I think, the one in Sweden, are shot dead by the police at the time. So they start off being a suspect just for a few seconds, and then suddenly they're dead.
This is what I was saying about what's happened in the US. 95% of the people who've been convicted of terrorism were entrapped. In other words, there wouldn't have been a terrorist incident unless the FBI had set them up. The other 5% all end up dead. Look at the Tsarnaev brothers. Yeah. One of them shot dead, the other one's nearly shot dead, and now he's going to be sent to prison without proper, you know, they don't want any of this to come out.
The Tsarnaev brother that was shot dead in Boston Marathon bombings, he was actually, with his hands tied behind his back, handcuffed. He was stripped down to his underpants, and he was handed over to the police, and yet still apparently managed to threaten and attack the US police so much that they had to shoot him dead.
Yeah.
Even though he had his hands tied behind his back and he was completely stripped, virtually naked.
Well, I put it to you, Sherlock Holmes, that in actual fact these people are patsies. They're people who have been set up to carry out these attacks, and either to be caught and sent to prison or to be shot dead.
So what we're suggesting here is that in things like the Boston Marathon bombings, this attack in France yesterday, and the Westminster attack back in March, the police have murdered the person who was the suspect.
Yes, and that means that there's no trial. And of course, if it came to trial, you might find out what's really going on. So, for example, there was a trial at the Old Bailey about 18 months ago of somebody who was supposedly going to Syria to join ISIS, and his defence lawyers argued quite successfully that the group he was going to join was actually working with MI6.
Okay, so what's the actual consequence of having these these attacks dealt with simply by the press, by the media, saying, oh, here's the terrorist, we've got him, hooray, thank goodness, rather than by the courts?
Well, what we're doing is we're creating a narrative where everybody feels that they're under attack, either by Islamist terrorists or by right-wing terrorists, like the assassination of the Labour MP Joe
Cox,
or Breivik killing 70-odd Labour Party activists in Norway. The purpose of all of this is to scare the bejesus out of everybody so that we accept states of emergency and more power for the intelligence services, who I suspect are actually behind the attacks in the first place. It's a power play. That's what it is. And it's a very brutal one.
And if we're moving towards a police state, what other indications are that that might be happening?
Well, I think this permanent state of emergency, which is never going away, is very much part of it. I mean, when it came out that the chap who'd run the lorry into the Berlin Christmas market was an informant for the security services. The way the security services justified this, as they did in Northern Ireland, is we have to infiltrate these groups. But I suspect that some of these groups are not just infiltrated, they're actually set up by the security services. And if we're thinking about Al-Qaeda and ISIS, there is no dispute that they were set up by the Safari Club, which was started by the DGSE, the French Secret Service, the Saudis, the British and others, to fight in Afghanistan. And then the story is, Bin Laden and all these others who we armed and trained, and they were trained by British Special Forces, many of them, then went rogue and we lost control of them. But nobody disputes that we set them up, or that most of the funding for them comes from Saudi Arabia, our major ally, that keeps everybody in Filton in Christmas money.
Love Bristol.
Love
BCFM. 93.2.
Well, horrific bomb attack last Saturday near Aleppo. A Syrian evacuation convoy was targeted. Monitor says at least 126 people were killed as an explosion targeted a convoy of evacuees from two pro-government villages. A large blast killed at least 126 people, including 68 children, Martin, in an attack near buses carrying Syrians evacuated from two besieged government-held towns. According to a monitoring group, the explosion on Saturday in Rashidin, west of Aleppo, targeted residents who were evacuated from a rebel-besieged towns of Fua and Kefraya in Idlib province under a deal reached between the Syrian government and the rebels. The UK-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights on Sunday said at least 126 people were killed in the blast, raising a previous death toll of 112. Syrian Civil Defence, a volunteer rescue group that operates in rebel-held parts of Syria, said on Saturday at least 100 people were killed, while a report on Syrian state TV gave a death toll of 39. But you may have seen the pictures as well as I have. For scores of coaches which were evacuating refugees from the Syrian so-called civil war, absolutely smashed to pieces, burnt to a cinder, Martin. And we're told it was a suicide bombing.
Well, it may or may not have been a suicide bombing. It was an act of barbarism by whoever carried it out.
I checked very, very carefully. I went online and had a look at all of the sort of main Associated Press, Reuters, etc. reports. There didn't seem to be any evidence that it was a suicide bombing at all. That apart from possibly it was a truck bomb, a vehicle that blew up. But the bomb was so enormous that, I mean, how can you tell in that sort of case with such a massive high explosive bomb that it's been a suicide bomber that's been behind it?
Well, you can't, is the simple matter, unless there's a proper investigation, which, of course, is virtually impossible. What is interesting, of course, is that they've been held up by the rebels. They were supposed to drive forward, and they were hanging around for hours with no toilets and no food because the rebels wouldn't let the convoy through, and then it was attacked. Now, it was one faction of rebels were supposedly guarding it, and another faction then carried out the attack. Now, the fact is, of course, that these weren't beautiful children. Not like the ones killed by gas by the horrible government the other week. These were ugly children, Shia children. Obviously not as important as the beautiful children, which led us to fire 59 cruise missiles at the Syrian airbase. The hypocrisy surrounding the Syrian civil war, so-called, is absolutely disgusting. We, the British, the Saudis, the US, the Turks, the Jordanians, we've been arming and supporting these terrorists for the last 5 years and before. and then we cry crocodile tears when something like this happens. In fact, we don't even cry crocodile tears about this. Nobody's even heard of it, have they? This hasn't been on the front page of the newspapers, has it?
And the fact of the matter is, you don't actually need a suicide bomber to attack an aid convoy like this.
Of course you don't.
It's quite easy to plant a provide
bomb.
Explosive device inside another vehicle. It could have been blown up by remote control. There's all sorts of other. Actually, it's quite feasible that it might even have been some sort of drone strike. It's very difficult for anybody in the immediate area who were killed by this to be able to give any kind of testimony about what happened.
Yeah, well, the rebels have been pretty clear from the get go. They were saying Shias to hell, Christians to Lebanon. Yeah, that's been the slogan of the Sunni extremist groups which have driven the insurgency in Syria for the last few years. They've got no real popular support. There's between 60 and 70,000 fighters in Syria who are not from Syria. They're from places like Chechnya, Jordan and Libya, of course. And, of course, that's what happened in 2015. The sarin that was used at the Ghouta chemical weapons attack, according to investigations by Seymour Hersh, Carlo Del Ponte of the UN, there's a very interesting guy from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology who's also come out and said there's no evidence whatsoever that the Syrian government carried out that gas attack. And these terrorists, the ones that just killed these 70 children, they are the allies of the Western intelligence services, the Turks, who are part of NATO, whose chaps are all trained at Sandhurst. I'm not a pacifist, Tony. What should we do with British military personnel who've got their fingerprints all
over
this
sort of thing?
Are you
saying that the British military personnel might have been involved in this attack?
Indirectly, yes. The White Helmets, for example, who are a propaganda outfit embedded with Al-Qaeda, are funded by British taxpayers' money, to the tune of millions of pounds.
Can you just spell
and
were out-
set up by James Le Mesurier, a former British intelligence officer, who is the Svengali behind the whole organisation.
when we're told something is a suicide bombing, you really do not need to have someone give their own life as a suicide bomber when you're attacking a soft target. Can you just explain why that is?
Well, it's the whole concept of suicide bombing is in order to try and create a narrative about how these people are and what goes on. I'm not saying that there aren't suicide bombers. There are some suicide bombers. And, of course, they will be working within these organisations. People who are part of these Salafi terrorist groups are pretty crazy nutcases, but they're also being they're being directed and supported by intelligence services. And of course the military use of suicide bombing was demonstrated most effectively by Hezbollah in Lebanon in 1983, where two Hezbollah militants killed over 250 US Marines. Because if you're prepared to die, you can hit hard targets.
That's against a hard target, isn't it? I mean, say, for example, with this convoy, they've been sitting around for hours. It would be a very simple job to bring a truck bomb along, park your vehicle, walk away. Why would you need to die as part of the bombing?
You wouldn't necessarily, but we don't know. You've got some extremists on the terrorist side in Syria who would actually regard it as a martyrdom to kill lots of Shia children and take their own life at the same time. As you will see, neither Hezbollah nor the Syrian Arab Army has ever used suicide tactics throughout the civil war. They've always fought to the finish without usings. And Hezbollah's policy on suicide bombing is quite interesting. We had a chap from Hezbollah come to speak in Bristol some years ago, and he said it's actually against our religion to use suicide bombing, because you're not supposed to take your own life. You know, your life is actually a gift from God and you shouldn't throw it away. We only ever use suicide bombers of any kind when there's only one way to get to the target. So when they killed the 250 US Marines in 1983, they decided that was the only legitimate way they could get to the target. And of course it worked, in the sense that the Reagan regime then withdrew its forces from Lebanon, although they then carried out various random shellings and airstrikes on the population at large, because they were so frustrated that they couldn't get their finger in there.
Love Bristol. Love BCFM. 93.2.
93.2. Sorry about the last few weeks had a few problems with those jingles. I'm not quite sure what to do about it, but anyhow, look, Martin, US is preparing charges to arrest Julian Assange. Now, this is legal officers for the US government saying that they will try to jail all publishers of leaks of US material, whichever country they're in, even Britain. And I wonder what's going to be the British reaction to this. Are we going to hand Assange over to the Americans? This is what he was called, paranoid, wasn't he, for saying the Americans were up really after him, and it looks like he was absolutely right.
Well, of course he was right, and I think also what's interesting is that in many of the things that WikiLeaks have leaked, they've actually helped the Trump administration and people in the Trump administration. And at one stage, Trump and others were saying that these people were, Edward Snowden and Assange were heroes. But now, of course, they're now in the pocket of the deep state, and Assange is now an enemy. And, of course, Assange is quite right. He's not safe. The Ecuadorians have said, and of course the left has just won the election in Ecuador, Lenin Moreno is the new president, and they've said, well, won't let him come to Ecuador. Incidentally, Marine Le Pen has suggested that both Assange and Snowden could be given asylum in France if she wins the presidential election there.
So the US Attorney General Sessions better hurry up with his legal action, hadn't he?
Yeah, well, they've got no legal basis for this. Unfortunately, if people leak stuff, you've got to find the leakers. So you can't punish Assange.
This is shooting the messenger, isn't
it? And, of course, you can't catch the leakers because, in actual fact, you've been telling lies for years and years and years, and somebody, like Snowden, who was basically a low-level contractor, just walks out of the building with all the stuff that you've got, because all this electronic surveillance and all the rest of it, anybody can just hack into the system and get hold of it.
Hidden in his Rubik's Cube.
Yeah, that's right. And if you're reliant on those kind of systems, then you're going to be very vulnerable to whistleblowers, and, of course, also, you're going to be totally vulnerable to your opponents in the Russian Secret Service.
I suppose the U.S. Attorney General, by preparing charges against Assange, is really saying this guy, the stuff that this guy is publishing, is absolutely hot stuff.
Well, as far as I can see, nothing they have published has been proved to be wrong. So they're telling the truth.
I mean, this Vault 7, for example, one of the most recent ones.
Intelligence services tell lies.
And the Vault 7 stuff, for example, is exposing a massive criminal activities by these intelligence services. Criminal hacking of our computers, criminal hacking of televisions, etc., etc.
Yeah, but the fact is that the Western intelligence services of the CIA at the top of the food chain have been carrying out criminal activities for years. Drug dealing, terrorism, subversion.
But they'll say it's all
kinds.
in the cause of national security.
Yes, but this is a closed loop. They carry out these terrible things. They facilitate drug dealing. They facilitate terrorism, and then they say, "Oh gosh, goodness me, we need more resources to deal with the drug dealing and terrorism which we created." What we need is independent police investigation, and the only places where we've actually seen that in recent times are in Italy, and to some extent in Northern Ireland. And and police officers who are investigating these kind of crimes have got to recognise that the intelligence services are always prime suspects.
Yeah, but those intelligence services are higher up the food chain than the ordinary police. How can they do anything about the intelligence services? Well, they can put political pressure to have cases
dropped,
etc.
Well, it's a question of whether there's going to be a rule of law or no rule of law, isn't it? That's what's at stake here, and ultimately there will have to be a rule of law. I think the demands of the have got to be very clear. We want a rule of law. Effectively, we need to abolish these intelligence services completely and put a lot of their personnel in prison. And there's going to be a war, and they're all going to end up dead.
Are there precedents for clearing out the Augean stables in the intelligence services in other parts of the world?
Yes, there are. I think they did a pretty good job in Turkey at one stage before Erdogan decided to make peace with the intelligence services over there. Top generals, NATO generals from Turkey were sent to prison for drug dealing and terrorism, because they were drug dealers and terrorists. There was no doubt about it. They'd been pretending to be Islamists, pretending to be right-wingers. The Grey Wolves, who carried out loads of attacks inside Turkey, were working directly with the army. And this is all NATO, you see. This is the point.
I'm thinking also of places like Chile, post-Pinochet.
Yes, less so. Some people have been punished. I mean, the problem is, and in Argentina, some people have been punished. Even though, the point is that ultimately, whether we can get a rule of law or not, the rule of law has to be our pole star. We want a rule of law everywhere. And that means all intelligence services, they can choose to work outside the law, but then they are not going to be protected if they are caught. And we have got to get popular support for a full investigation of all terrorist offences.
I mean, don't they usually bump people off if it looks like they're about to get caught?
Yes, they do all of that. And but at what point, we pay taxes for police forces to protect us from these kind of people. The problem is that the police, as you say, are lower down the food chain than the intelligence services, but they also defer to the intelligence services. Sir John Stevens investigated the Force Research Unit in Northern Ireland. He recommended to Jackson, who was then head of the army, that Brigadier Gordon Kerr would have to stand trial as a terrorist. What happened to Sir John Stevens, as he was made Lord Stevens, kicked upstairs and the whole thing was dropped. But of course there's evidence from BBC Panorama investigations by John Ware, which shows very clearly what was going on. And ultimately, of course, Brigadier Gordon Kerr is still alive, and ultimately should either stand trial or there should be some kind of peace and reconciliation process where he comes forward and gives evidence.
Moving to Iran, Donald Trump is saying Iran today is violating the spirit of the nuclear deal. Also, we've got a presidential election coming up in Iran, and they have approved 6 presidential candidates, but they've blocked Ahmadinejad, who was trying to re-stand. He was the previous president before the current one, Rouhani.
Yes, well, I mean, he tried to stand, but he has served 2 terms. So I suppose Khamenei's line on this is, you've had 2 terms in power, you shouldn't really be allowed another go. I think that's mistaken by the Iranians. They should let him stand. What they want to do is, the moderate faction in Iran want Rouhani to remain in power because they don't want to escalate confrontation.
Do you think he will stay?
Well, I don't know. It's a simple answer. I really don't know what the opinions are in Iran.
But what about the fact is, what about Trump moving to, I mean, this is more important in a way, isn't it? Trump is now saying, "Oh, Iran is violating the spirit of the nuclear deal," even if he hasn't actually.
Well, he's got apparently a make or break thing will happen in June, where he either agrees to carry on with the deal or he scuppers it. The Iranians will be fools to presume that he's going to continue with the deal. And of course, what Trump's got to realise, if the deal's off, the deal's off, and then therefore the Iranians are perfectly allowed to carry on with doing what they were doing.
What about this Russian thing you were saying, I think it was last week, talking about whether a country is deal-ready, and saying that the US in many ways is not deal-ready?
Well, I think the Russians have drawn a pretty obvious conclusion from what's happened in the last few weeks, which is there's no point trying to do deals with the Americans. Even if the person in front of you isn't directly lying to you, they're not in a position to decide the policy. And I think that's right. And therefore, they are going to have to work on that presumption that we will carry on talking to you. Tillerson went to Moscow this week and they talked to him, but they didn't basically agree anything with him because there's nothing to agree. And of course, if we're going to war, we're going to war. But that means that the West doesn't necessarily win. This is the idea that we go to war and we always win. That's a delusion.
Well, it is. It's certainly in Afghanistan.
Absolutely delusionary.
Iraq. I mean, it's the.
Yeah, they haven't won anything since 1945, actually.
Vietnam.
They didn't even win in Korea.
Well, it is. It makes you. I mean, it's what Chris Mulligan, the publisher, the US publisher Chris Mulligan from Trini Days, calls the lose scenario. In other words, you go into a war actually with no intention of winning.
Well, for the military industrial complex and for the deep state that we're talking about, it doesn't. Winning or losing is irrelevant. I certainly, the cruise missiles that were fired at Syria the other day, they'll all have to be replaced. Raytheon shares rose on the stock market.
$100 million worth.
So it's win-win.
Anyway,
not win-win for the civilian children that were killed there, but they weren't beautiful children. You see, the Shia children, they weren't beautiful. The civilians that killed around the airbase, their children, they weren't beautiful. But the ones that were supposedly killed by Assad, they were beautiful. They were beautiful children. And Ivanka cried, and then Donald just had to go to war, even though he promised everybody he wasn't going to do that.
Also, we were talking about North Korea last week, with China moving troops to the border. Now Russia is sending troops to the North Korean border. North Korea are also warning of a preemptive strike amid continued US threats.
Well, there's been a deal on the table for years. Every year, the Western powers and the South Koreans practice invading North Korea. And of course, that, and they do it at the time of the North Korean harvest and planting.
Okay, but so in other words, getting serious, isn't it? The North Koreans are now saying that all of the US mainland will be reduced to ashes.
Well, that's bluff, I suspect. But the point is, they have got nuclear weapons. If I was the Koreans, I'd just say we've got nuclear weapons here. Delivering them to attack civilian targets in the US is actually A, counterproductive, and B, quite difficult. But sinking your fleet, that's quite easy. Yeah, as it comes towards the Korean Peninsula from Australia, as it moves there, if it's quite possible that the Koreans could conclude, if they're coming here to attack us, let's nuke them before they get here. Just kill hundreds of thousands of US service personnel and then say, come and get us.
Also, the nerve agent attack that did not occur. Apparently, this is the Syrian attack in Syria, apparently by President Assad. But there's a chap called Theodore A. Postel, who's a MIT professor, is saying that it didn't actually happen. Analysis of the times and locations of critical events in the alleged nerve agent attack at 7 a.m. on the 4th of April in Khan Sheikhoun in Syria. He's a professor emeritus of science, technology and national security policy at MIT, and he says it was a fake attack.
Yeah, he said the 2015 fake attack was fake as well, and he used to work for the US Navy. So I think we can presume either A, the attack didn't take place, it was basically a video PR stunt by the White Helmets, or B, they really did kill some people, because they've done this in the past, usually pro-regime civilians, and then say, oh, the terrible Assad regime killed these people. And this is a standard operating procedure of NATO intelligence services going back to the 1940s. It's not as if it's new. We know they do these things. In Turkey, the top generals, NATO generals, sent to prison for doing exactly that. And of course, these top NATO generals were all cooperating with MI6 and all trained at Sandhurst. So don't say this is nothing to do with us. We are part of this.
Now, this morning, the US Defense Secretary, Mad Dog Mattis, is it James Mattis, I think his real name, is it?
I believe so.
He was over in Tel Aviv and asserting, banging his fist on the table, I would imagine, I'm not sure if he had a table to bang his fist on, but saying, don't be fooled by dastardly President Assad, he's still got stockpiles of weapons of mass destruction, and therefore we've got to keep very, very close eye on him.
Well, that's completely belied by the UN inspectors that took them out. Scott Ritter, if you remember who he was, Colonel Scott Ritter, former US Marine, who was a weapons inspector in Iraq, he basically poo-poos all of this. Now, these people can assert whatever they like. That doesn't mean it's true. And in actual fact, why, just a logical point, why would the Assad regime want chemical weapons or need them? Do you know why they had them in the first place? It's because the Israelis illegally have over 200 nuclear warheads. So having some chemical weapons like sarin is basically a deterrent against being nuked by the Israelis. But they've got no real battlefield use. In actual fact, the conventional weaponry supplied by the Russians to the Syrians is far superior to chemical. Chemical weaponry hasn't been used in warfare much since the First World War because it's pretty useless. You've got to have the wind blowing in the right direction, all sorts of problems with it. It doesn't really work. It's not used. And what the whole thing about weapons of mass destruction, chemical weapons, biological weapons, it's in order to create we're all supposed to be, oh, they're using chemical weapons. What's the difference between a chemical weapon and a conventional bomb that just killed 70 children at a checkpoint in Syria? Why is the one terrible and awful and to be condemned forever and the other perfectly acceptable? It's just a load of hypocritical drivel, frankly.
Okay, so let's have a listen now to James Mattis. He was over in Tel Aviv this morning. What did he have to say?
Our close and regular dialogue is a reflection of the enduring bond between our country's militaries. During this meeting, we had another in-depth conversation, sharing a keen appreciation for the security situation facing Israel and our friends in the region. The depth of our relationship was clear following the U.S. strike in Syria, when Israel immediately expressed its strong support for our action to enforce the long-standing international prohibition against the use of chemical weapons. Looking across the region, we in the United States recognize ISIS represents a clear and present danger not only to Syria and Iraq, but to Israel and other countries in this region, to Europe, and ultimately to the U.S. homeland. The coalition campaign against ISIS in Syria and Iraq, as you noted, Minister, it is on track, and we have accelerated and intensified that campaign to surround and isolate the enemy so we methodically remove its physical caliphate.
Well, the NATO powers carried out an airstrike which killed 80 Syrian army soldiers at Deir ez-Zor not long ago, and they've just carried out an airstrike on the Syrian Arab army's airfield, which killed several people and did lots of damage. They're the people who are fighting terrorism inside Syria, and the only people allowed to fight terrorism inside Syria according to international law. So both attacks actually broke international law. We are not in the right here in international law. We're in the wrong. Incidentally, the Israelis killed 1,000 Palestinian children during the attack on Gaza in 2006. They weren't beautiful children either.
So are you saying that ISIS isn't actually really a threat, as Mattis is saying?
It is a threat.
To Israel?
It's never attacked in Israel, strangely enough. Never. And in actual fact, their fighters have been taken into Israel and given medical treatment and then taken back. And both the Syrians and NATO forces have carried out airstrikes in support of ISIS. So the attack on the Syrian airbase, ISIS then followed up with a ground attack because they knew that the attack was coming in. The Syrian military, the Russian military, the Iranian military and the Chinese military are pretty clear that ISIS is a cat's paw of the Western powers and the Saudis.
So does James Mattis not know this?
He does, but of course what he's doing is trying to pull the wool over our eyes and say we are there. What they do, ISIS are like foxes. They've been created and bred so that we can do fox hunting. So ISIS appears in Afghanistan and suddenly we drop the mother of all bombs on them, although it's not even clear whether ISIS was in control of the cave complex. The cave complex itself had been built by the CIA in the 1980s, going back to the Safari Club as we were talking about earlier. So when they dropped the mother of all bombs on this cave complex, and it doesn't really have a penetrating capacity, so it's not even clear what went on there. We are basically, you cannot presume that we are not in a kind of Matrix-style situation where they say this and that and the other's going on, but in actual fact it's completely opposite to what they say. And I think what's beginning to happen is everybody's beginning to, other forces are beginning to wise up. Well, also, people in Turkey know that the Turkish army, run by NATO, carries out false flag terrorist attacks. It does. It's been doing it for decades.
Anyway,
the breakdown of the ceasefire between the PKK and the Turkish army came after a so-called ISIS attack on a Kurdish rally.
Martin,
and everybody presumed that that was the Turkish military.
Martin,
and they were
the
right.
Israeli President Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu was very pleased to welcome James Mattis to Tel Aviv this morning.
This is a genuine pleasure to welcome Secretary Mattis to Israel. I've heard a lot about him, read a lot about him, and I think this is a propitious moment. Israel has no better friend than America. America has no better friend than Israel. And this is a partnership based on common values in the deepest sense of the word. We sense a great change in the direction of American policy. We noted the very clear and forthright words, Mr. Secretary, that you had to say about Iran. This follows very strong and forthright words on the part of President Trump and very forthright deeds against the use of chemical weapons by Iran's proxy, Syria. This has been appreciated around the world and in our region. I think this is a welcome change, a strategic change of American leadership and American policy. We have common values and also common dangers. The common dangers are based on the twin threats of militant Islam, the Shiite extremists led by Iran, the Sunni extremists led by Daesh. We are committed to thwarting these dangers as we are committed to seize the common opportunities and great opportunities that I think are before us, Mr. Secretary, because of the understanding of many of our Arab neighbors as to the commonality of the threat, but also as to the opportunities of the future. And I look forward to discussing with the Secretary of Defense of our great American ally how we thwart the dangers and how we seize the opportunities together. So welcome to Jerusalem.
Well, thank you, Mr. Prime Minister. It's an honor to be here in Israel, our longtime friend and ally in the region. The two dangers that face Israel and all of the other nations in the region that are trying to maintain a stable and peaceful and prosperous region are those that I'm here to discuss with the Prime Minister, especially the week before Holocaust Remembrance. I think it's important that we remind ourselves that if good people don't band together, then bad people can do a lot of damage in this world. And we're committed to stopping that and doing whatever it takes to pass on peace and freedom to the next generation. So thank you very much, Mr. Prime Minister. It's a privilege to be here with you. Thank
you. Well, it's a love-in, isn't it, between these extremely reactionary forces. Mad Dog Mattis, the sacker of Fallujah. He was in charge of the US Marines when Fallujah was reduced to rubble and thousands died. And of course, the Israelis
at Fallujah, there were twice as many civilian deaths than there were the insurgent deaths, actually, weren't there?
There was, yes. And of course, the attack on Gaza in 2006 killed 1,000 Palestinian children, but they weren't beautiful children, so it doesn't matter.
So this idea that the Assad government was behind this chemical attack, despite the evidence, they're still, both of them still saying that he was behind it, particularly Netanyahu. Are they deluded or what's going on
here? No, they're lying.
Are they being fed false information?
No, they're both lying. They both know that it wasn't Assad, but they don't care. So why should we believe anything they say? They've both got a reputation of being liars.
So what evidence do you have for that?
Well, we've just had the evidence from the chap from MIT, who's an expert on chemical weapons attacks. I mean, why would the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, top scientists, why would they have anything to say about this, apart from the fact that it clearly wasn't Assad? I've seen the photograph that he looked at. He said, well, that was exploded on the ground. That was certainly wasn't an air-delivered thing. And the videos, which are supplied by the White Helmets, don't forget the White Helmets are funded by us and set up by James LeMessurier, etc., they are lying. These people lie.
Love Bristol. Love BCFM 93.2.
Well, it's a civilian think tank that's driven war after war for the past 50 years. We're going to hear now from US Army whistleblower Scott Bennett, who used to work there at the RAND Corporation. Martin, what are the RAND Corporation?
Well, it was set up in the Cold War it means research and development, and it was basically a Pentagon think tank, and they were the ones that, they've been behind an awful lot of the gamesmanship and military brinksmanship that we've been subjected to.
The RAND Corporation has been a military policy think tank for decades, kind of right. notorious, even, back to things like the Vietnam era. But what evidence have you got that the RAND Corporation had anything whatsoever to do with the Arab Spring? And what would their motive be?
Well, I was there. I know. I was in the briefings. I was there. I was at the RAND Corporation. I was in the building. I saw the people. I saw the people from Syria. I saw the people from Egypt. I saw the people coming around with radio broadcasts and journalists and people that were disc jockeys and all of the conversations about infecting the communication with the words democracy and civil human rights and things like that.
So how does a company like RAND Corporation, how does it actually make something as vast and apparently completely spontaneous? How does it make something like that appear on the world headlines scene?
Well, it was funded. Now, when I go back into my analysis and my experience, I saw George Soros and the Soros organizations as funders for a lot of those activities and conversations that RAND was having. So, putting this big piece of the jigsaw puzzle together is daunting, but at the same time, with these little pieces we find, they say, George Soros and the Open Society Foundation, and of course you have CIA, Mossad, MI6, all stepping in. And I think, again, the promise was democracy and capitalism and human rights was going to evolve out of the broken cement when the dictators were crushed. And the opposite seems to have been coming true.
Amazing. So, and also, you know, this is actually majorly implicated in U.S. foreign policy, British foreign policy, yeah. Israeli foreign policy. And yet actually it comes under a kind of civil society setting. It's not a military group, RAND Corporation, at all.
Yeah, it is. RAND is a civilian think tank. But of course, the military industrial complex and the police state of America is really running rampant. And it saddens me when I look and see some of the things that Trump has done. He's handed over great control to the military industrial complex, and they are not to be trusted, Tony. I've seen these people up close and personal. They are, a lot of them, so mentally and psychologically unhinged from the 15 years of war that they've lost all of their humanity. They've lost all of their higher sensibilities and their higher pursuits, such as building bridges and common diplomacy, for God's sake. Diplomacy is where we express our best of humanity, because we have to engage in a cross-cultural dance of entertainment, of open communication, of harmony and tranquility in order to persuade and win people's hearts and minds over. And hopefully, as Sun Tzu said, convert an enemy into at least a non-hostile neutral party. But instead, we've been pushing the militarism and the aggressiveness and the regime change, which has not won us any friends. It's not improved our reputation or our economy. It's not improved Europe, and it's destabilized and ruined every country we've touched. Well,
now, that's Scott Bennett there, the U.S. Army whistleblower. But, Martin, the irony here is that because the RAND Corporation is a civilian organization funded in part by George Soros and the Open Society Foundation, etc., that even as a military officer, when he was working there, he's quite at liberty to talk about it. It doesn't come within U.S. national security restrictions.
Yes, that is interesting, although, of course, he's also given us information about things which were more secret, has he not? He's a very interesting character. He's a genuine person.
A psychological warfare officer.
A psychological warfare officer, and these people know
and he's uncovered,
what goes on.
Probably his most important, I think, act is, along with Brad Birkenfeld, to uncover the use of Swiss bank accounts to fund ISIS and Al-Qaeda.
Indeed. So when we were talking about earlier who funds ISIS, they know who funds ISIS. And they know where they're getting their money from, and nothing is done about it, because in actual fact ISIS is a puppet of the Western intelligence services, as I've suggested the Russians, the Syrians and the Iranians well know.
Okay, thank Debonair, a local Bristol Labour MP. It's going to be on BBC Radio 4 at 8 o'clock this evening as part of an election discussion programme of some sort. I think it's Any Answers, it's called. But it's time to sign off now for the Murdoch News at 7 o'clock. Coming up, Arabian Nights with Mohammed Makawi warming up, and he'll be live on Facebook after the news. Thanks to our guest in the first hour, Labour Councillor for St George and Troopers Hill, Fabian Breckles, and to Old Labour Oxford economist Martin Summers, our sister show Dialects, here on BCFM at noon every Tuesday. You can get this story's links and comments page for all your questions, complaints, anything you want, one word, at thisweek.org.uk. That's thisweek.org.uk. Download our MP3s and listen in the car if you like, iPlayer or anywhere else. You'll find me on Twitter at Tony Gosling. Here's wishing you a relaxing and long, enjoyable BCFM weekend. Billy Quain's Saturday Edition Arts Show tomorrow, 10 till 12, and Danny Lopsch on Sunday evening, 7 till 8. I'll leave you with music from 1976. It's the Steve Miller Band. Do please join us at the same time next week. God bless, and don't let the banksters get you down. Future. I wanna fly like an eagle.
enough to eat. Shoo the children with no shoes on their feet. How's the people living in the street? Oh, there's a solution.
BCFM is an award-winning community radio station for Bristol, bringing you national news on the hour, live from the Sky News Centre.